I just don't buy into that. We can't manage our house like we would manage a business, because you don't manage your staff, you lead your staff. And children are like that, right? We lead them, and we lead them by modeling and example. And if we haven't got our shit together, there's no way they're going to have theirs together. And when we show up authentically, so that means we make mistakes. Yep, I make mistakes. Great, that gives them permission to make mistakes. And we show up authentically as our true self, then they get to too, and what a gift.
Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of thriving through pregnancy, birth, and beyond. If you aspire towards exceptional parenthood and are looking to navigate the joys and challenges of raising children in our fast-paced world, you've found your tribe. I'm Philippa Scott, and
I'm Philippa Cox. Together, we're Philippa Squared, unpacking the real talk on modern parenting, peeling back the layers of its complexity from pregnancy and birth to the adventures beyond. This podcast is your guide to unraveling the nuances of parenting in today's world.
And we're keeping it real, sharing stories and having conversations with insightful guests, giving you clarity and direction on your parenting journey.
This is where your adventure begins, transforming the challenge into a journey of wonder and joy, where you discover ways to craft your own parenthood map, not just follow the one handed down to you.
So settle in, get comfy, and let's laugh, learn, and grow into the parent you aspire to be. Welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design.
Hello, and welcome to Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design. We're thrilled to have you here with us this week. First of all, hello, Pippa, my beautiful co-host. How are you today?
Hello, Philippa. I am sensational. We are in spring almost, and it feels like summer. It is amazing, absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
And who do we have today?
Today we have the beautiful Philippa? Liz Kent. Liz Kent is a mental health social worker and mum coach. So mother of three. Thank you, Liz, for joining us all the way from, well, tell us, where are you?
Yes, thank you for having me. I am from outside of Baltimore in Maryland in the States, so East Coast, kind of right in the middle there. Right on the Mason-Dixon line between the North and the South.
there you go. Perfect. Yeah. And tell us a bit about yourself. How did you become a parent coach? How did you become a mental health social worker? What's your story?
Yeah, sure. So I have been a licensed therapist for, it's been 16 years now, which is crazy to me. Worked in a few different settings. And then when I had my oldest, who's going to be 10 in like 6 weeks, which is also crazy to me. Like a decade of parenting feels like a milestone. But I just got really interested in like the perinatal period, postpartum period. And so started getting more trainings, and I had sort of shifted what I was doing, where I was, the setting I was working in, so that I could have more time with him. And just as I then had subsequent children and my mom journey kind of continued on, I got interested in motherhood further beyond just the postpartum, because like those years are really hard, but it doesn't really, it's still hard. Like when they're not just infants, you know, there's lots of things that are hard. So yeah. And then I have a private practice in Maryland where I specialize in maternal mental health and see moms anywhere from preconception through parenting of like elementary school age kids. And then I also developed a course for moms who want to really like calm the chaos and feel like they can stop feeling overwhelmed and feel connected with their kids. And so I have a group coaching program for moms that want to do that. So
amazing. That's awesome. So very aligned, obviously, with the work that Pippa and I do, which is fabulous.
Yes. Yeah.
So what makes you passionate about this? What did you see that mums were dealing with that made you decide to really, well, what were you dealing with that made you go, oh, I really need to dig into this?
Yeah. I mean, that transition to like becoming a mom was just totally rocked my world. I am kind of like type A. I like things to be like organized and, you know, in control of things. And so, you know, when you become a mom, you're just not in control of a whole lot anymore. And that was just such a transition for me. So, and I had a lot of anxiety about everything, you know, just questioning everything. And like, there's just so many messages that moms are getting about like, you should be doing this, you should be doing this. And just the constant like research and stress. And we have access to so much information that it was so overwhelming. And so as I sort of started getting into it, there's actually a pretty big network of perinatal mental health and other like birth workers in my area. And so I got connected with a lot of them. I did like the postpartum support international training and just kind of, you know, kept getting more and more into it. And I think the more I've talked with moms just in my work, but also like in my personal life, and seeing just like how many moms are struggling and just how overwhelmed they are and how stressed they are, just, you know, is like such a good reminder that we're kind of all in the same space. And I think when we look at, you know, social media, we think everybody's doing it so much better than I am. And when we like really are, if we can be authentic with each other about it and really kind of be vulnerable, then I think we realize like that we're all in it together. And so that's been really, I think, great for me because it's helped me adjust my own expectations for myself and then be able to encourage other moms to do that too. So,
yeah. And that's so true, isn't it? Because with social media, we always put our best selves first. Mm-hmm. And when the first thing we do, a lot of people do when they, you know, wake up in the morning is check their social media. And when they yep. see, you know, Fancy down the road with her beautiful kids all looking so fantastic going to school, or the beautiful dinner that they had last night, or whatever. It's like, that's not me.
Right.
And so it does create a lot of anxiety and a lot of feelings that, oh no, I'm just not good enough.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at it and what you so beautifully said, and we've said this in other episodes as well, that when you actually talk to other moms, they're feeling very similar to what you were feeling.
Yeah. Yep.
So that differentiation between the artificial life of social media and real life is something that has to be highlighted. Don't you agree, Philippa?
Absolutely. It's really interesting that you talked about, you know, being a type A and coming at parenting thinking that you'd be able to control, and, you know, because that's what you used to, right, in your life. And I recently wrote an article for my LinkedIn page about, you know, women coming from a very corporate space. They're used to being, you know, they nailed their university. They, you know, so they did all their training, they did all their stuff, they made their career progressions. And now they're like, okay, well, next step is being a mom. And
yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that most people will spend potentially $100,000 on their career training. And we're lucky if they spend maybe a couple of thousand dollars on learning to be a parent, what is arguably the most important role they'll ever have and the longest job they'll ever keep. And yet there's very little preparation and planning put in. And we actually did an episode recently on 24-hour parenting. Because what I think is a blindside to so many parents is this idea that, you know, it's not 9 to 5, it's not structured, it's not controllable, it's gonna be swings and roundabouts, it's going to be up and down, a roller coaster of things. And as soon as you get used to it, it's gonna change on you. And that's not something that most women, I believe, in today's world are prepared for. And part of that is because they don't see what really happens inside the house of somebody who's already doing it. So we don't have a drop-in society anymore. You don't drop into, you know, 30 years ago, even 40 years ago, when I was a kid, my mum, you know, nobody had a mobile phone. If you were by someone's house, you just swung by and dropped over and you got to see life, like with all the mess. And if you were still in your pajamas when they arrived, you were still in your pajamas when they left, right? Like it was just how it was. Whereas today, everybody's got a mobile. Everybody can, you know, say, hey, is it a good time? Or they book in 3 or 4 weeks ahead in order to be able to have a visit because everybody's so busy, right? And so we're not seeing it for the reality that it is. And the reality isn't wrong at all. It's just messy and it's big and it's a lot, right?
And it's normal. It is normal life, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
And Liz, it's interesting. And Philippa, what you were talking about, type A personalities and that need for control. And I know as a midwife, I've looked after many, many, many women who are type A personalities. And I've seen them have a lot of trouble when their baby is born. What insights, what little gems have you learned about that, about navigating life in such an uncontrolled way when you really are wanting control? That's what your energy is.
Yeah.
So how did you cope with it? What did you do and what did you learn?
So hard. As we're talking, I'm picturing when my oldest was, he was born on October the 5th. And so Halloween was like, you know, within a few weeks. And I remember getting all these Halloween decorations out and feeling like I need to decorate my house for Halloween when I have like a 2 week old. And like just the expectation in my head that that was like something that I should do. And so, I mean, really practicing self-compassion and adjusting expectations for like what is realistic and why am I doing things? You know, I mean, even last year I got out all these Halloween decorations, kept asking my kids, do you want to put these up? And they were like, meh. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it. If you don't care, why do I care? You know, but being able to like kind of think through that, like, who am I doing this for? And where am I getting like this expectation that I think it should be a certain way? Where does that come from? And I think for a lot of times it comes from like the way we grew up. And I think it comes from like our culture and like what we see other people doing in reality or on social media, and just like learning that it's okay to not do all of those things all of the time. And I think for me, like having the second kid, I like did it a little bit, you know, I adjusted a little bit. And then the third kid, I was like, oh, this is just not, it's just not feasible anymore to kind of do some of the things that I was trying to still do with one or two. But I think just that self-compassion piece of like really being able to recognize that I'm human. We're all human. We can't do everything perfectly. I tell moms a lot, like talk to yourself like you would talk to your best friend, because if your best friend was griping to you about something she was struggling with as a mom, you would probably be like, you are doing awesome. You're an amazing mom. Like, you're so great. You do so many great things. And we never talk to ourselves like that. We're so much harder on ourselves. And so if we can just change the narrative in our own heads sometimes towards our own selves, it would be so much better.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Certainly would.
Because a lot of that comes from obviously our, you know, our childhood, our unconscious programming, what we're showing up with is when times are hard, you know, when shit hits the proverbial fan, that's when what's inside us comes out, whether that's good or bad, stressed or calm, all of that is what's going to come out at our kids and at ourselves. And changing that is the real work, right? Piper and I talk a lot about doing the work. The real work is about changing what's going on in your unconscious and actually being able to show up as who you want to be. And the need for control is linked there, right? So often when we feel out of control because we can't control our own emotions, because we can't, because we have trauma perhaps that's not turned off and we're reacting instead of responding, then the need to control whatever we possibly can is heightened, right? So when we turn all of that off, the need to control just goes away because, okay, it is what it is. How do I work with that? Or that's not acceptable, so I'm withdrawing or I'm moving away or I'm not accepting that or whatever it might be. But you don't come at it from a place of agitation and anxiety.
Yeah.
You can come from it. To it as from a place of calm and being chilled about, okay, I'm not accepting that, but I don't have to get emotional about it.
I think like that focus on like what you do have control over, like you do have control over saying like, I'm not going to accept that behavior, or I need to walk away and take a break or whatever. And instead of like just getting agitated about the things that we can't control, like the kid won't get their shoes on and we can't get out the door to get somewhere on time. But what can you control? Like, I can walk to the car and like stand there and wait calmly by myself until he puts his shoes on or whatever, you know?
I can't tell you how many times I've turned up to the shop and gone, Serena, where are your shoes? Oh, okay. So we're going barefoot in Townsville in the middle of summer on concrete. Yep, that's a good idea. Let's go.
And I bet she walked really fast too.
She either walked really fast or she begged a ride on my back and she was so little.
Oh, and not only that, were you teaching her a little bit of responsibility?
Well, you know, I'm a bit of a softie sometimes. Yeah, look, there's so much there for mums, right? Like there's the expectation is that we can apply all of our know-how from other spaces in our life and just manage it. And I've talked about this before. I know we had a conversation with another guest about this idea of managing our household, managing our children. And I just don't buy into that. We can't manage our house like we would manage a business, because you don't manage your staff, you lead your staff. And children are like that, right? We lead them, and we lead them by modeling and example. And if we haven't got our shit together, there's no way they're going to have theirs together. And when we show up authentically, so that means we make mistakes. Yep, I make mistakes. Great, that gives them permission to make mistakes. When we show up authentically as our true self, then they get to too. And what a gift. What an incredible gift.
Yeah, and the one thread that I'm seeing through this is self-perfection, self-examination.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It does require a lot of hard work.
Yeah. It is. It's work, but gee whiz, it's worth it.
It is.
It's not, Liz.
It is. It is worth it. It is a lot of work, though, and I understand why a lot of moms feel like they're so in the thick of things that they can't even think about how could I spend this energy, mental energy, to like work on myself or work on things.
So what tips would you give for women who are in that scenario, in that place? What tips would you give them to go, okay, I'm so overwhelmed. It's like, oh, my gosh, I can't deal with life. What three things would you be able to impart of knowledge, of wisdom?
I think, we talked about this in our previous conversation, just like kind of really looking at what your values and priorities are for yourself and for your family, and looking at like, is what you're doing, all these things that you're feeling overwhelmed by, are they in line with what your priorities are? And if they're not, because I think sometimes we get overwhelmed by like the nitty gritty of having kids and all the stuff in the house, but we're also contributing to it with like activities and like all the things that we get involved in and commit to. And so like, are all those things in line with what you really prioritize or what you really want, what your goals are for your family? So
is it what society is expecting of us as a mother and a father and a family?
Yeah. I often will have clients go through like a values exercise where I have a list of like 100 values, right? And like, they're all great things. And everybody's going to pick like a different combination of their top five. But I tell them like, you have to narrow it down to five. And then can you look at like, how are you using your time? And does it line up with what those values are? And that's a really hard exercise for people. I think like to narrow it down to what those top things are, and then to look at like, how am I spending my time? Is it really aligned with what I am like hoping for my life?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
First module of my parenting course is, what are your values and how do you set your intentions from that? People look at me and they say, but I just need to figure out how to deal with my toddler not eating or not going to bed or not having tantrums and all that stuff. Yeah, I get that. But until you know what your values and intentions are, you don't know how to show up authentically with dealing with that. You don't know how to be in a space where you can be consistent and really impart what it is you want to. If your ultimate goal is connection, then and that's a value for you, that secure connection, well then
you're going to discipline and differently than what you would if your primary value was time efficiency. You know, like
exactly.
You've got to yes. know what your values are so that you can then wrap your parenting around that. Because I don't actually believe that one size fits all parenting. You know,
no.
One size doesn't fit all children.
Right. I mean, we're all like a unique, each family is made up of unique individuals. So everyone's circumstances are different. Everyone's personalities are different, everything. And I think that's where I talk to a lot of moms about this too, with this comparison trap. Because like, even just circumstantially, like we don't know what other people, you know, if you're looking at another mom and like they're doing so much more, they might have like a grandparent that lives in the house with them and is like, there's three adults in the house, you know, like we just don't know all the ins and outs of other people's lives and what the circumstances are, how flexible.
And people putting on this beautiful mask. People just put on masks. That's what we do as human beings, because we want to display our best selves to the world.
Yeah.
So it's really, really great with interactions when we can be in an interaction with another human being and not pass judgment with that,
yeah.
because we do not know what they have walked through.
Yeah.
You know, even if someone in the shop is really crazy, you know, just really upset, we do not know what they have done. We do right. not know what they have been through. And yeah. same with mothers and fathers and all of that. And the thing with values is that it is the most beautiful way when you elicit your values to really start to examine yourself, get to know yourself. It's beautiful.
You said something there, Pippa, that I wanted to come back to, but it's just disappeared from my brain again because perimenopause.
Mate.
Oh, wait till you get to menopause, Philippa, then you really know. Then you really know.
Tell me what you just said more. It'll jog my memory.
I've heard lots of things before. What did I say?
No, I know, it's gone.
Was it about self-examination? Was it about feeling in control? Was it about everyone's working in walking their separate path?
What it was? Do you know what it was? It was about compassion for others and not knowing their story. But here's the thing: we know our own story, and we still don't give ourselves compassion, and we still don't not judge ourselves. So when I'm working with clients, one of the things I'll ask them to do is think about imagine themselves as a newborn baby. Now you're a newborn baby. What does a newborn baby deserve? What have they earned? Have they earned new clothes? No. Have they earned a clean bottom all the time? No. Have they earned to be fed? No. Have they earned cuddles and somebody to sing them to sleep? No. Have they earned hours of walking around burping? No. They haven't earned any of that. Do they deserve that? Are they worthy of that? Absolutely they are. Nobody questions it. So they are worthy innately to be cared for and loved. They are worthy of compassion, of attention, and of all of the good things in life. They are worthy to run a multi-million dollar company. They are worthy to run a country. They're worthy of whatever they choose to do. And we can all easily accept that. Well, I'm that newborn baby 40-odd years later. I deserve and am worthy of that just as much as that newborn baby was. At what point do we lose our worthiness? And I don't think we do, except in what society says we should do, or the experiences that we've had in our life. Now, those experiences, they either contribute to or withdraw from the sense of worthiness we have. But we have an innate tenacity. You know, you only have to watch a little child learn to walk, right? They just get up and go again. Every time they fall over, they get up and go again because they know that they can. They just have to keep trying, right? And so, but we lose this worthiness all of a sudden through our experiences in life. But if we can, as mothers and fathers,
Imagine ourselves as that newborn baby who is worthy and deserving. Then maybe we can show ourselves a bit more compassion. And my clients walk away with that feeling, that knowing. And when they start to doubt themselves, hold on. Is that baby any less worthy? No, nor am I. Great, let's keep going.
Yeah, I love that.
That's beautiful.
Moms particularly tend to put their children's need, you know, everybody else's needs above their own. Like they would see the value and the worth in their family and not see it in themselves.
Yeah.
So that's like a great
exercise. It's like the mask in the airplane, right?
And of course.
I've said people this that a bunch of times. Yeah, we feel like, no, I would put it on my children first. But I've said this to you people, what if I only get halfway through my children before I'm passed out? I can't get them all, right? And they need me. And I really noticed this in my own parenting. You know, when my oldest was 16 and I had at the time 16, 15, 13 and 10. And I'd fallen apart. Fallen apart, like adrenal fatigue. And, you know, I was just not okay. And I'm like, I'm not done here yet. I have a child who's 10. Yes, okay, I'm nearly there with the oldest two, but I have a child who's only 10. I need to keep going here. And so, you know, I nearly fell into that trap where I'd been putting them all first for so long that I was almost not okay enough to be a parent anymore. Like I wasn't parenting. I was simply surviving.
Surviving, yeah.
And that's not okay. That's not what my children deserve. They don't deserve scraps from me. They deserve the best of me, no matter whether they're the first or the third or the fifth, right? I don't know.
And it doesn't feel good. You know, it doesn't feel good to us. I think then moms put a lot of guilt on themselves when they're not parenting up to their own, you know, what they know they can do or they want to be doing. And then there's like this whole guilt trap of not feeling not good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it goes into a self-perpetuating loop, doesn't it?
Mm. Yep.
And what do we teach our children when we do that? You know, I our children watch us more than they listen to us. And so when they watch us be hard on ourselves, when they watch us not care for ourselves, when they watch us, you know, berate ourselves, or, you know, that's what they learn is expected of them.
Yeah. I think that's like what you were saying, you know, goes back to what you were saying earlier, just about like modeling our own when we like are compassionate to ourselves and forgive ourselves. And I love this book called Habits of the Household. And he talks about discipline. The author talks about discipline and how the root of the word discipline is disciple. And that when we're disciplining, we're really like we're discipling, which is really to teach. It's not to, you know, punish. It's to teach. And so I always try to keep that in the back of my head because I just think that that's such a great like model of what discipline should be. Are we teaching them something or are we just punishing for the sake of punishing because we're angry, you know?
Yeah. That is a really great term. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But thinking about just this, you know, how we treat ourselves and how they're modeling and how we treat them, you know, I had a client who used to talk a lot about when she was a kid and she had spilled something and one of her parents got really angry with her for like spilling the cereal box all over the floor and like, you know, and then she was like, I'm not going to do that to my kids. Like I'm trying to make sure that they know it's like, it's okay to make mistakes. It's not a big deal. And just that like kind of making sure that we're changing those patterns too of how we were maybe what the models that we saw and what we're showing our kids. So tonight I spilled like a huge thing of water while I was getting dinner on the table and my older two kids came like right over and like took kitchen towels and they were like, it's okay, mom. And like helped me wipe it up. And I was like, okay, this is like, they know this is what I say to them. Like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. We'll clean. It's not a big deal. And they like said it to me and like both gave me hugs. And I was like, all right, this is good. They're learning.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It was great.
And it's not just showing up in that way for them though, right? It's showing up that way for you So, you know, last night when I dropped a thing of chickpeas out of the fridge and I was already running late like you. I had, you know, the workshop to run and all this stuff. And I was like, fuck. And I took a deep breath. Okay. Can somebody find me a dog to come in and clean up this mess? Right. And I just cleaned it up and got on with it. And that was the end of, I had a moment of expressing frustration. And then that was it, because it doesn't actually require any more energy from me other than to just clean it up. And so what my children saw that was that I showed myself compassion. I didn't continue to berate myself. I just went, oh, and then cleaned up, made it funny, moved on. It's all good. And so when we do that for ourselves, we are teaching them more than when we do it for them. So, you know, and your children are picking up on that. And that's all. And I speak to lots of parents who do it for their children, but don't do it for themselves. And what their children are hearing is that when I become a parent, things are different. When I become an adult, I'm held to different standards, or in order to be mature, this is what it looks like. And so they're seeing what you're doing to yourself more than they're seeing what you're doing to them. And I know it doesn't feel like that, but that's the reality of it, is that they will watch you. And if you're a perfectionist, and if you are, you know, if you need to have if you've got OCD or all of this other stuff, that's what they're seeing. And they think that when they are older, and maybe if you're a perfectionist, or I had this not long ago, I was sitting, getting my photo shoot done, talking to the makeup artist, and she was saying, I can't get my child to toilet train. She's 3. She won't do it. And I'm like, okay, so who's the perfectionist in the house? She's like, me. Okay. So what do you do when she has an accident? I'm really gentle, and we explain it's just an accident and we clean it up and it's all fine. I said, okay, what happens when you make a mistake? She's like, oh, well, like I get upset. And even if we don't say anything, there's an energy we put off, right?
Yeah.
There's an energy and that law of entrainment kicks in and everybody feels the tension, right? So when I said to her, if you can start treating yourself better when you make a mistake, she'll be willing to make mistakes too. But until you do, she knows what your real heart is about mistakes. And you can fake it, but she knows. And she won't be willing to try, because what if she fails? What if she disappoints you? What if you get angry? We have to do our own stuff. We have to look to ourselves first, because our children can feel our heart even when we don't say the words.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my rant.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. And the makeup artist got added value. How beautiful. I bet that was a jaw-dropping moment for her, because that was perfect.
Right? Like, but sometimes it's about seeing it from a different perspective, right? And it's just about, it's about knowledge. And it's really hard to do, wouldn't you agree? It's really hard to do that, showing up for ourselves kindly and giving ourselves a break, if we're still dealing with unconscious core beliefs and identity that says we're not enough, that says we are flawed and not worthy and undeserving. If that's our internal dialogue and we've got traumas to boot, then showing up for ourselves in authenticity, in that compassion, just doesn't exist. So we have to do the work before that. Well, it's ideal to do the work before that to clear it, so that we are showing up authentically, remembering that our children can feel our heart and they know that we're faking it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can actually show up that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
I just wish I'd known that sooner. You know?
Yeah. I wish that I could make every mom just like know that innately, you know, because you can like say it, but they don't necessarily always, or they're not ready to hear it, or not ready to like do the work, or they just don't you know, it's too hard or it's too overwhelming or.
Yeah. Yep. And sometimes they're just so sleep deprived, they don't have the energy to even think about that kind of thing. And it's interesting. I've just created a little mini course, like a 5-minute emotional reset for mums to, you know, to drop their energy down and really connect in with what they're putting out into the room around them. And I'm studying my sleep consultants or my sleep coaching course at the moment because a lot of the parents I work with are so exhausted. They just need help getting their kids to sleep. But this energy work and this emotional reset actually helps them be able, because it's a cycle, right? The more uptight and intense we are, the less our children sleep, the more exhausted we become, right?
Yeah.
And then it just keeps going round and round and round. So when we can break that cycle, and that's what this emotional reset does, is just breaks the cycle a little bit to start a new, you know, spin-off and a new rhythm in the pool. So, you know, finding a tool, finding something out there that can just help you break that ripple and create a slight shift can sometimes be all you need to just get yourself in a new pattern so that you can do the work that you need to do. We just want to break whatever spin you're in.
Yeah. I think so many moms are like in the thick of it so much that they don't even recognize in the moment that they need to do something to reset. And that's part of it too, is like recognizing. Because I think like what I see a lot is that like the overstimulation, and then it kind of comes out as like what people term mom rage, you know, because their moms are so overwhelmed with like the sensory input. And so that's something that I've like really been talking with moms a lot lately about, is like being able to just recognize like physiologically, how is your body responding when you're feeling like more tense and stressed and overstimulated, so that you can recognize like, okay, this is the place where I need to like take a break and reset and get myself in like a calmer state so that I can address whatever is going on.
Yeah. And it's really handy because we talk about mom rage, right? But it's really important to understand the difference between trauma rage and that slow build up and burn, right? And when you're a mom and it's overstimulation, it's usually a slow burn that you can see coming. And if you can get in ahead of that, you can stop that from escalating to the point of rage. But understanding that if it comes out of nowhere, if that rage feels like it's like lit match to petrol, like this, all of a sudden there's anger there and you're raging and you can't control it, that's trauma and you need to do some bigger work, right? But if that's not happening for you and it's not trauma rage, then let's see if we can try and, you know, stop the build much, much earlier in the piece and putting in systems in place. And, you know, a big part of that is community. And you talked about that before, Liz, you know, being part of a community, having a mum you can call and go, I'm about to lose my shit, talk me down.
Right?
Yeah. Like, we all need that sometimes. We all need, I remember being 36 weeks pregnant with my fourth baby, and my eldest two had disappeared. When I found them, there was scissors and hair everywhere, right? I'm like, and these children were about to be, in 4 months' time, they were going to be flower girls in a hairdresser's wedding, right? So there's a huge amount of pressure for there to be hair, right, and beautiful curls and all the things, right? And anyway, my children had given themselves a very nasty mullet, and I was 36 weeks pregnant. I've got all, and I was so overwhelmed, and I lost it. And I was crying. I called my best friend, who happened to be a different hairdresser. I'm like, you have to come fix them because I can't even look at them. I couldn't, you know, but we all have to have that friend. We have to be part of a community where we can have somebody who we can call and have it talk us down from the ledge, you know, and be willing to be vulnerable and courageous enough to make call and say, I can't with them right now. I can't with life. I need that support.
And not to take like the pressure or the guilt of like they did this thing because I wasn't supervising them, or like I had a very similar moment maybe like 6 months ago. My four-year-old found a can of spray paint, acrylic spray paint in our basement, and sprayed our TV, our piano, my husband's guitar, like all the most expensive things in our house. And it was clear, so you couldn't really see where it was, but you could tell there was like a film on everything. And I initially was like, oh my gosh, like I should have been watching him better. He was like in the basement by himself where like there's no kid stuff down there. Like, you know, I'm like, I never would have let the first one, the oldest one, do that, like roam in the house like that. Right. And, but giving myself that, like, but that happens with subsequent kids. Like the third kid does have more free reign in the house because I also have a 7 and a 9-year-old who have never drawn on walls or done anything like that, that I didn't have to worry about it. So. And I had that rage moment, was like texting my group of girlfriends, like, this is what just happened. I can't even talk to him. I'm so angry right now. And having friends, like I had a friend who was like, I'm coming over Saturday morning with a bunch of different, you know, chemicals, and we're going to help you clean it up and get it off. And I was like, okay, that's what, you know, those are the kind of friends like every mom needs to be to each other and to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful to have that support.
It was not a pretty moment. And we had his teacher conference the next morning at preschool, and we told her, and she was like shocked. She's like, I can't imagine him doing anything like that. And I was like, yeah, only at home. Not in front of anybody else.
I'm glad you didn't have the fluoro pink bottles up there.
Yeah. It was, you know, we could still, like, my husband has like since been like, oh, I found like a clear layer, like on something else, you know, like on a bookshelf or on something else down there that we like didn't see at first, but we mostly got it.
So it's the future discovery. It's kind of cute. Oh, look at this, 20 years later.
I think he thought it was like air freshener spray, like you'd use in the bathroom, you know, like, and he's just, and I'm like two floors up, like, it smells like paint in our house. Oh, I was like, I didn't smell it. And I'm like, it smells like the whole house smells like paint. Where's that coming from?
That's fun.
And that's kind of parental parenting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when I had this friend who, the first thing she said was, can I come over on Saturday and help you clean it? I was like, this is a friend that I do not want to lose, you know? And I think moms do have a hard time making friends a lot of the time, like, especially women who've transitioned from like a career into being home with their kids and had like a career pause to be a stay-at-home parent, because their whole identity has shifted. And so getting to know other moms, and or if they're in a new area, a new community, and just like it's hard to meet people sometimes. That's something I've heard a lot from like newer moms, that it's hard to make mom friends. And so I think that just goes back to like the more authentic and vulnerable we can all be, the easier it is for everyone to feel comfortable and know that there's a place for them somewhere. Yeah. We're all in this together.
And find a tribe.
Yeah.
Find your tribe.
Yeah, 100%. It's necessary.
And that's something you're really good at, Philippa.
It's my jam.
Yeah. Well, what a great conversation, ladies. It's been fantastic.
So fun. This was great.
So yeah, we'll put some stuff in the show notes, but how can people find you and work with you if they'd like to reach out?
Yeah, sure. So I post a lot on Instagram. I'm just at Liz Kent Coaching, and I've done some live trainings on there and some collaborations with other professionals. I just did one with like a mom coach. She works with moms around finances, like becoming a new parent and how do you manage your finances differently? That was really cool. And then I also have a Facebook group that's called Mental Load Mastery for Moms. And I put a lot of my trainings and strategies and freebies and stuff in there as well. So those are the easiest ways to find me and to see the stuff that I'm sharing with everyone that I hope is helpful to some moms out there.
Right.
Thank you. Any last minute messages you'd like to leave?
Yeah. Just leave us with some nuggets. Yeah. Oh, you're an absolute wealth of information and knowledge.
Gosh, I just keep circling back to this self-compassion thing that I think was kind of a theme through our conversation, and just really learning how to do that for yourself and adjust those expectations for ourselves and to be realistic with ourselves, be kinder to ourselves, because I think that makes a big difference in then how we respond to everything else that's going on around us.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, because we've got to be our own best friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely love that. Well, thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you. This was so fun to talk with you both.
Amazing. Well, don't forget to subscribe and follow. And if this podcast was useful to you, I imagine it would be to the other people in your life. So please share it. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye.